I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Dan and Michael Namiha. They are acclaimed artists here in Santa Fe and actually in the whole world. And the 25th anniversary of the Niman Gallery, which is on Lincoln Avenue here in Santa Fe, is tonight at 5. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Now, Dan, you grew up in an artistic family, multi-generation artistic. You are descended from the great potter Nampeo, whom we've talked about on this program. And I was wondering if you could tell us what it's like to grow up in a family where art is a way of life.
I always thought it was wonderful to grow up in a family of artists. Although most of the artists in my family were ceramists, beginning with my great-great-grandmother Nampeo, born in 1860. And from her and on down to her daughters and on to the granddaughters, the art of making pottery was handed, you know, on down to different generations. I'm basically this fifth generation, but I'm not a ceramist. Traditionally, at Hopi, the women did ceramics, but it was around, I would say, maybe around the late 1960s. Is when some of the men from the family began to move into ceramics. And today you'll see several men at Hopi who make pottery and beautiful work. Some of it is very sculptural. But that's the family I come from. Nampeo had three daughters. The eldest was Annie. And the second daughter was Nellie, and the third daughter was Fanny. I'm from the Annie family, the eldest daughter. And she had a daughter, Rachel. And Rachel actually is my grandmother. And her and my grandfather, Emerson, are the ones that raised me from infancy. How that happened was my mother was a nurse, and to get employment she had to go off the reservation to work as a nurse in a hospital. So I was left with the grandparents. So my grandmother Rachel and Annie always work on ceramics, so I was surrounded by that. And at one point as a kid they gave me some clay, but I didn't do any pottery, I just made them into sculpture. I also had an uncle by the name of Ray Naha, and he was a painter, so I was surrounded by that as well. It wasn't till I started elementary school that I got very much involved with painting. There was a teacher there by the name of Lillian Russell who introduced me to watercolors, oils, and casein and charcoal. So those were the mediums that I worked in, I guess, starting around 7 or 8 years old. And ever since then, I've been, you know, working with those materials. And then on to art, you know, different art schools. And today I still use those same materials. Or I work in that medium.
Right, right. Now, you are of Hopi and Tewa heritage, and I suppose a lot of people say, oh yes, Southwestern Native, but they're two very different cultures, and I wonder if you could talk about each one a little bit and how they influenced you.
Well, the Tewa are originally from New Mexico, northern New Mexico. There's a small band of Tewas that migrated out to Hopi and settled there on First Mesa. And so we're the only Tewa-speaking tribe out at Hopi. It's a small village. It's up on First Mesa. Out at Hopi, there are three mesas, and they refer to them as First, Second, and Third Mesa. So we're basically located on First Mesa. As time progressed, there was intermarriage between both tribes, the Hopi and the Tewa. So this is why my grandfather is Hopi and my grandmother is Tewa. So I come from both tribes. And we also adopted their system of, for example, if a child is born, that child goes into the mother's clan. So when I was born, I went into my mother's clan, which is the Corn Clan, which is Nampaño's clan. So that's what I belong to. Some of the Tewa tribes here, actually in northern New Mexico, are paternal. They have a paternal system. And we had the same thing, but in order for... I asked one of my uncles about this, and I asked him, why did we switch from paternal to maternal? And he said this was one way to try to keep our clan flourishing. And obviously it worked, because the Nampaño clan, Corn Clan, is a very large clan. And we have, it's a large clan of artists.
Now, your paintings, you draw very much and your sculptures on your native heritage. And I wondered, over the years, you leave home, you leave your childhood, you leave your roots, you come to a city, you spend your life in the art world. Are you looking back? Are you feeling your roots? Or what are you drawing on as an artist now?
Well, I go back and forth. There are times when I will draw on my tribal heritage. But other times, I actually... some of the work is completely non-objective. And it basically has to do with just color and form. And reducing realism into minimalism. That's basically what I'm doing at the moment. But when I think about it, I've been doing that since the 1960s. Late 60s, and over in the 1970s and 80s, 90s. So I still do that, but I'll just go back and forth all the time. When I go back to Hopi and visit my mother or relatives, and possibly, if there's a ceremony going on, I'm either involved or just there as one who is just viewing what's happening. Of course, I get inspired by that as well. And I always tell Arlo and Michael that, their native heritage is basically their foundation. And from that, they can do anything they want. And go in any direction that they want to as artists. But their true foundation is really where they came from and who they are.
When you say foundation, do you mean artistic foundation or something more about the person's soul?
Well, a foundation is, for me personally, I guess your roots. And your heritage. And from that point on, because both sons have been initiated, both not only at Hopi, but here in their Tewa village up at Okeawinge. So that basically is their foundation. From that point on, my own personal experience is that once we leave the reservation and go off in different countries or different places as artists, we absorb what is there as well, and that sometimes will filter through us. There's some of the work that I do has to relate to that. The idea that, for example, if a person, non-Hopi or non-Native, went to Hopi to visit and were guests and invited to witness one of the ceremonies. Sometimes they're sitting there, but they have no idea what they are witnessing. It's completely foreign to them. They've never seen that before. And some visitors that I've taken out there didn't realize that this still existed. And so it's just completely foreign, in spite of the fact that it is in the United States. So therefore, they're getting a fragment of a culture. The only way you would know what is really going on is if you grew up in that culture and you understood it. So they're getting glimpses, they're getting fragments of that particular culture. But at the same time, maybe they are touched by what they're witnessing and they take it in and go away with a different perspective. And that's the way I see art as well. And this applies to me as well. Once I leave the reservation, I go somewhere else. I leave the country. I go visit another culture as an invited guest. I have no idea what their ceremonies are about or their performances relating to their culture. And so therefore, I'm also getting a glimpse. But I always see art as a way of bridging that.
I was going to ask you, Michael, you and your brother Arlo are also part of the Niman Gallery with your father Dan Nameha, whom we're talking to right now, and your work doesn't seem to have what you might call kind of Native iconography per se. How do you experience yourself as having those Hopi Tewa foundations?
I grew up on the reservation up until a certain age, and then we moved to Santa Fe. And so after high school, I went to New York City. So a lot of my work is more related to my experience there rather than from being on the reservation. So a lot of the images that you see depicted are more contemporaneous in terms of social commentary.
Right. Yeah, I mean, somebody wouldn't look at your work and say, oh, Native artist, but how do you feel inside as an artist? Do you feel like you're bringing your roots to bear in some way?
No. I see my art as just that. I mean, it's art that I create.
One of the things that you do, and people can see it when they, if they go to the gallery tonight or any time in the near future, is you do some work that's photographs in which you are moving light sources, LEDs. There's music playing while you're moving, which the viewer might not know, and yet there's almost like an embodiment of music in these pictures. How do you work? How do you conceive of these?
Well, when I was young, I used to experiment a lot with whatever camera equipment my father had, whether it was 35mm film or video cameras. And I was always playing with flashlights and filming them against the wall and the different effects that they would create by overlapping them and spinning them really fast.
Which is super fun.
Yeah. And so when I started creating this new body of work, it was very much the same sense of wonderment that occurred when I was a kid. And what they are long exposure photographs. I set up the camera and then I place LED lights in front of the camera for about a 30-second exposure. And so the camera picks up the movement of light, but doesn't actually pick up me in it. And while I'm creating these pieces, I'm also listening to music to almost dictate the movement that I'm creating. And so I've titled each of those pieces the song that correlates to when I was making that photograph.
Right. And so they're almost like two-dimensional representations of the music and the movement, which you wouldn't know unless you kind of intuitively feel it as a viewer. Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
Thank you.
Now, you also have a group of works that from Galisteo that are kind of an oil drilling theme. Tell mm-hmm. us about that.
Last year I was out in Galisteo photographing the landscape out there, and on my way out and on the way back home, I saw signs along the road and on people's bumper stickers that said no drilling in Galisteo, no oil in Lamy. And so when I got back home and started looking over the photographs, I placed these blocks of color while I was editing them over certain pieces of the landscape. And so those squares came to represent a piece of the landscape that may not be there someday. And then I started researching color psychology and used various colors that have calming effects on people. And so green, purple, and surprisingly pink have all been known to calm people.
It was very funny. When I was over at the gallery yesterday, you were talking about how sometimes athletic teams will paint the visiting team's locker rooms pink so that they get too calm before the game.
That's right. That's what I read in a few articles, as well as the drunk tanks also being painted pink.
Right. That's very funny. And you know, as an artist, as a painter, you, again, use those things to affect so that the person doesn't necessarily know I'm being calmed down. But right. Now, you also did a series based on signs that you saw that had been put in the ground during that pilgrimage walk to Chimayo. And there were signs put up by evangelical Christians, but they, taken out of context, they're kind of funny.
Mm-hmm. I've actually been doing this walk to Chimayo for the past 5 years with a close friend of mine whose father passed away from cancer, and she used to do it with him. And when he got sick, that's when she asked me if I would do it with her. And so these groups aren't allowed to leave those signs on the road anymore. But the first couple of years that we did it, we came across them as we got closer to Chimayo, and some of them say, how often do you look at someone with lust? Are you sinless and perfect? Are you even good? And so I photographed them and did a whole series based on what those signs read, and also I've taken those words and incorporated them into some other pieces that I've created.
I think it's so interesting to make art out of those signs, because in the context of a religious walk, when somebody puts those signs up, how often do you look at someone with lust is supposed to be guilt-inducing.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at it in art, you look at it and you say, all the time.
Exactly.
And are you sinless? No. And there's a kind of like... I don't know. Those works just made me happy because they kind of celebrated the reality of just being a person. And they're also subtle because you have kind of imagery of eyes kind of almost visible, semi-visible in the background behind the letters.
Right.
So you are the... Well, Dan, you and your two sons, Michael and Arlo, are now the three people in these in the gallery, the Niman Gallery, which is having its 25th anniversary celebration tonight, and a gallery devoted entirely to the work of first a single artist and then a family being completely kind of unbrokenly successful for decades is a very unusual thing. And there's a couple of things I wondered. One is, I mean, here you are, very successful on some level, I mean, in the marketplace. How do you keep your work fresh?
Basically through experimentation. And it's always been like that from the beginning. All my teachers that I worked with, almost every one of them told me just, you know, would give me the materials and then just let me go. And so I basically just experimented my whole life. And I always found that experimentation was the key to different directions in your art, whether it's painting, sculpting, printmaking, photography, whatever it might be. And through experimentation and allowing yourself that doorway to have that freedom to do that is limitless. And so I tell the kids, you know, Michael and Arla, the same thing. When they were kids and they were in my studio, I just gave them materials and let them be. I never told them stay in the line or whatever. I just gave them materials and let them go and let them have the freedom to create whatever they wanted to. And I think that's the way their approach to their work, you know, is a takeoff of that.
Now, you, as we talked about before, come from a long line of artists, including very, very skilled and accomplished women artists, ceramists. Are there any women artists now in the current generations who are working in your family?
Yeah, there's quite a few. They would, you know, they're all ceramists, as far as I know. One of my cousins, Jean Sami, and her sister Rachel Sami. My mother was still doing her ceramics up until recently, and she fell ill, so she couldn't do any more of her ceramics. And her name is Dextra Kotskaeva. And other relatives who basically in recent years have passed on, those are my mother's sisters. And then other clan relatives like Tonita Palaka and her sister Iris and others, those are the granddaughters of Fanny. And they still do their ceramics as well.
The 25th anniversary of the Niman Gallery is tonight. There's an opening at 5 o'clock. It's at 125 Lincoln Avenue here in Santa Fe. Artists Dan and Michael Naminga, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe. And let's also give a shout out to your brother, Michael Arlo, whose work is also featured in this show. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
You're welcome.